I didn't even realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a back seat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Pro football full circle.
First and goal from the one. There's Aaron Jones. Got it. Fourth touchdown of the night for Aaron Jones. They have the golden sombrero in baseball. That's a bad one. That's a four strikeout night. A four touchdown game for Aaron Jones. Looking for senior cheesehead again.
Guess who's back? Welcome to Pro Football Full Circle right here on the Sports Grid Radio Network, Sirius Channel 204. Joe Lisi and Holden Kushner holding it down. Talking week three NFL coming up. You heard about the injury news. Carson Wentz might not go. Two ankle injuries. If he can't, it will be Jacob Eason in week number three. Houston does have backup. Davis Mills starting for Tyrod Taylor, the former Stanford standout, will get the snaps this coming Sunday. And then you heard about the news about Tua. Can he go? He is day-to-day. But Holden, last night, guess who's back? St. Aaron Rodgers. Dominant victory. They cover the number 35-17 over Detroit. He throws for 255, four touchdowns. Aaron Jones, you heard it, one touchdown on the ground, three receiving, a complete domination of the Detroit Lions. It was close for about a half, but in the second half, Aaron Rodgers and the Packers show their colors and flex their muscles last night in Green Bay.
Well, they looked horrible in the first half, and Aaron Rodgers was pissed off. Everybody's saying he didn't care, the Packers didn't care, and he took that to heart. We knew he'd take it to heart. I thought they would show up just gangbusters in the first half. It took them a half, though. I'm sure they went in there at halftime. They got reamed out. Maybe they just talked very calmly because Aaron Rodgers likes to say relax. So they got namaste. They got centered. They came out. They just blew the doors off the Lions. I think that was the turning point. I think the turning point in the Packers season, if they start going on a roll, was that bomb to Davante Adams. That was absolutely beautiful. It got them on the board, too. It set up a scoring drive. So the Packers are back. A lot less to worry about concerning both offensively and defensively. And also, the bigger story from this game, did you hear about Aaron Jones and his dad's ashes? Did you hear about this?
No, that I didn't hear.
Okay, all right. So, post-game, he's doing the interview, and he's like, and his dad just died. And he goes, listen, but I had a necklace on. My dad's remains are in the necklace. And after I scored the touchdown, I lost the necklace. So his he goes, that's where my father would want me to, he would want to be, though. He would want to be in the end zone. Ultimately, hours later, after Aaron Jones was looking for it, the grounds crew was looking for it, Lisa Salters was looking for it, they found it. He got his dad back. So a very emotional night for Aaron Jones, and I'm very, very happy for that young man.
Yeah, it's a great story. I think when you look at the performance, if we could just dive a little bit deeper into Green Bay, any concern that obviously outside of Adams and Tanyan, there wasn't like a big play wide receiver there? I mean, we didn't see some of the other players step up. It was Aaron Jones, it was Tanyan, it was Adams in terms of the passing game. Any concern moving forward as they do face maybe tougher competition in the NFC because he didn't distribute the football maybe around to other playmakers last night?
I mean, did we expect this, though? Didn't we expect this? This is what he does. Little bit shocked that Valdes-Scantling did not make a catch. He only saw four targets, though. So we know who butters his bread. It's Adams, it's Tonyan, and he likes throwing out of the backfield to Aaron Jones. Aaron Jones caught all six of his targets last night. They added Randall Cobb. I fully expect him to get three or four targets a game. Little concern that Valdes-Scantling didn't make a catch last night, but at least he targeted him four times. So this is the problem with the Green Bay offense. And when you get deeper into the playoffs, it's just that the target share starts to shrink, and there's guys you just try to take out of the game. You can't take Davante Adams out of the game, okay? They tried again last night, 8 for 121 on 9 targets. But Tonyan stepped up. Jones stepped up, and we'll see if that second wide receiver, who that second wide receiver is from game to game. And last night, Randall Cobb. Valdes-Scantling got one more target, but Randall Cobb was the guy that had the three catches. So him and Tonyan had three catches. It's a very concentrated passing attack, and they're going to have to get Valdes-Scantling more involved down on the big throws.
I agree. They need other playmakers and wide receivers to get involved. As dominant as Davante Adams is, come playoff time, and when they do face stiffer competition, especially in terms of secondary, right? They're going to play more bump and run. They're going to double team Adams, force other players to beat you over the top. They're going to need to develop that as the season progresses. Quickly on Detroit, what is the identity? We talked about it. Outside of Hockenson, they don't have a legitimate playmaker at the wide receiver position, even though Cephas stepped up last night. They need to develop this. And we talked about Swift, right? I mean, you draft a guy second round, 8 carries last night. What is the identity with Dan Campbell? It's the same old with Detroit. You bring in Jared Goff. You have no wideouts or wide receivers outside your tight end, and you don't want to run the football. So what are we doing with this offensive philosophy moving forward in week 3 and beyond?
I think that this is who we thought they were, too. I mean, they're a horrible team, Joe. Like, I'm not buying into Dan Campbell, but this offense, this roster is garbage. And I like Cephas. Can we talk about the Lions in depth just a little bit more on the break? Because I only got 20 seconds. We got to get into this garbage team.
When we come back, we'll be talking Detroit and then taking a look at week number 3, Joe Lisi and Holden Kushner. Keep it where it is.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Listening to Pro Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and Holden Kushner.
Back on Pro Football Full Circle, breaking down last night's action between Detroit and Green Bay. We talked about Aaron Rodgers and Aaron Jones. Going to talk about Jared Goff and the Detroit Lions right now. They do have a week 3 matchup as a 7.5-point underdog already to Lamar Jackson and the Baltimore Ravens. It's a 1 o'clock kick. It's on FanDuel right now, minus 110 either way. Total set holding at 49.5, juiced slightly to the over at minus 112. But we talked about it. What is the identity with Dan Campbell? We know that they got the draft picks with Jared Goff and shipping Stafford to L.A. Are they just going to tank now? I mean, I know the players aren't, but is this MO Jacksonville last year where they lose 15 straight games and they're completely out of it by mid-October?
I actually like the effort last night defensively from these Lions. They, and really, for about three quarters, ultimately the Green Bay talent was just too much, and that ended up sinking them. But I do like the effort from this team for now. But ultimately, yes, they just don't have enough weapons. They have a mediocre starting quarterback in Jared Goff. And we're talking, why did the Lions make that trade? Well, they got rid of Stafford. They weren't winning with Stafford. Stafford was hurt, big contract. You get a ton of picks, like first-round picks from the Rams, and you get Jared Goff. That was a great trade. That was an absolutely terrific, non-Lions-like trade. They've got a couple of decent running backs. They've got Swift. They've got Jamal Williams. And then Hockenson is an A-plus tight end. Cephas will be a fine number three probably once they get more talent there. I like Quintez Cephas. Ultimately, it's the defense, though. They just have so many issues on that side of the ball. So they're going to have to rebuild there. They're going to have to rebuild their line. They've got so many different pieces that they have to fill in, Joe, that it's just going to be a long season, and they're probably, with excellent management, and this is not the Lions' MO. The Lions always seem to bungle things, but with very good drafting, they could be a very competitive team in 2 years with all these picks they've got.
No, I could agree with that. I see that type of situation where they can make a wild card in a couple of years. I guess the biggest question, and we talk about their defense, right? When your offense can't sustain drives, especially when you lack offensive firepower like Detroit, right? It is very critical to sustain drives, time of possession, run the football effectively. They were only 4-9 on third down conversions last night, but more importantly, lost the turnover battle. You're not going to win ball games, especially on the road, when you can't run effectively, number one, and sustain drives and then lose the turnover battle. It's almost like a recipe for a loss. But that being said, DeAndre Swift is there, and we could look at two running backs, Swift and Dylan, in the same boat. Both of these players were drafted in the second round, respectively, by Green Bay and by Detroit. Why don't they use them more in the offensive scheme? I just don't understand it. You know, DeAndre Swift was a first-round talent coming out of Athens. Feed him the rock. I mean, 8 carries last night. Could he get 15? I mean, we saw Adrian Peterson tote the rock last year for 18 to 20 carries a game when they had 3 running backs there. What is the mindset of these, of how coaches approach running backs in today's NFL?
Well, first of all, that is the MO. Second of all, there was question as to whether or not Swift was even going to play last night. So he had some injury issues, all right?
He always does, though, doesn't he?
He does. He had a groin. I guess the groin club is growing, too. That's what Tomlin said today. He's like, the groin club. We got 4 guys in the groin club. All their groins are hurting them, including TJ Watt. But no, back to Swift. I think we're going to have to take a wait and see here. But they gave money to Jamal Williams. So, yeah, even with the groin injury, they're going to have a split. And just about every single backfield is a split these days. So I'm not going to crush them for that. I think Jamal Williams is a pretty darn good all-purpose running back. He's a guy, to me, 3 catches on 3 targets last night. He's not a big explosive guy like Swift is, though, right? Swift is the explosive guy. Jamal Williams probably more of the short-range guy. Swift can catch the ball. Williams can catch the ball. I'm not too concerned with that. That's just how teams are going these days. I mean, look at what happened in Dallas. Tony Pollard, despite all the money that Zeke Elliott has, even Jerry Jones is coming out and saying, well, I don't know if I believe him with this. He's like, just because the contract doesn't mean that we're going to take Tony Pollard's carries away. You're just not going to have bell cows anymore. Derrick Henry is the exception to the rule.
I totally agree with that, but then why reach up and get these guys? Tony Pollard was a late-round selection, and if you watch Tony Pollard in Memphis, the guy was a 5-tool player, punt returner, kickoff returner, utilized in the short to intermediate passing game, but taken in the later rounds. They didn't reach up and take him second round the way Swift and Dylan were taken.
Right.
So if that's my point, is the GM says...
New GM! New GM! He doesn't care.
Yeah, I know, but you still have a second-round guy that you're just basically giving him 8 carries a game. I mean, look at Dylan last night. The guy's 232 pounds, 5 carries, 18 yards. You're telling me you have to give Aaron Jones 17 carries? I know he's productive, but then why have Dylan on the roster if you're not going to utilize him?
Why have Dylan on the roster if you're not? Because at some point in time, Aaron Jones is going to get hurt. You need a good backup in this league.
Right, but that's, I guess, when I look at running backs, right, and we talk about dual threats, we always say, all right, they split the carries. Aaron Jones is the guy that gets 85% of the rock all the time at the goal line. He's a $175. They don't put Dylan in on the goal line. They put Aaron Jones in. I mean, that's what I don't understand, is that that's a situation where you have a 235-pound running back with thighs the size of a chair. I mean, or a car for that matter, and you utilize a 175-pound scat back in terms of the goal line situations. Explain that, and I know he scores, but why have Dylan then and not utilize him to his strengths at all?
You want to know how pissed off I was last night? I had A.J. Dillon over 6.5 carries, and I'm going, oh, this is great. There's a blowout. Dillon's going to come in and run the clock down, and they gave the 2 carries to Kylan Hill. Oh, my God. Nobody got tilted.
I know. They always have Aaron Jones. It's amazing. He's productive.
I love Aaron Jones. He's a stud. He's a stud. He deserves it. He loves that offense. Aaron Rodgers loves him. He's a perfect fit in that offense. Do not besmirch the name of Aaron Jones and tell me that A.J. Dillon needs more work. You're saying, we want one running back. You just told me that with the Lions. Well, you got the best running back here in Aaron Jones. Why did they take A.J. Dillon? Why are you taking running back so early? That was a mistake. Okay, until Aaron Jones goes down and then A.J. Dillon is the man that comes out. But, yeah, that doesn't bother me. That's the way that the NFL is these days. We just see way too much injury attrition at that position to go in there with one bell cow.
Come playoff time, if Green Bay is in it, A.J. Dillon will be toting the rock more than Aaron Jones come playoff.
More? No. More.
That is my prediction right here in the month of September.
Why?
Because you need that big ugly. You need that heavy. Look at what Leonard Fournette did for Tampa Bay. Everybody was talking about Rojo. It was Leonard Fournette, the big beast, that carried them to the Super Bowl last year. And he had 89 rushing yards in the big game. I truly believe that if they want to make a Super Bowl run, Dylan will have a bigger part in terms of the running game than Aaron Jones at the end of the year. But that's just my prediction. We'll see how it plays out, and then who knows?
You got to let me take a counterpoint here. Do you remember the NFC Championship game in January against the Bucks?
Yeah.
Jamal Williams actually out-carried Aaron Jones 7-6. And A.J. Dillon ended up having 3. So as cockamamie as it sounds, the words that are coming out of your mouth right now, they're probably correct. They're probably correct because Williams and Dillon had 10. Jones had 6. I know it was a different game script, though. If Green Bay could play ahead the whole game, then Jones probably gets more carries.
We'll talk about it when we come back. We'll be talking about week number 3, Carolina and Houston, Arizona and Jacksonville, Joe Lisi and Holden Kushner right here on the grid.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Pro Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and Holden Kushner.
Ripping through the NFL action, we're going to turn our attention to NFL week number 3. First game on the board. Remember when all the pundits said that Matt Rhule was in and over his head, that 7.5 win total for Carolina was a joke. There's no way Carolina can challenge for a wild card. Well, guess what, baby? Nobody's talking now after the Panthers are 2-0. Sam Darnold and the crew, what a dominant 26-7 win over famous Jameis. Remember Jameis Winston going to lead the league in passing yards? He got abused last week, holding 2 INTs, less than 100 yards passing, dominant performance by that defensive front 7. Now Carolina goes on the road to face Davis Mills. You heard it in the opening of the show. He gets the start over Tyrod Taylor on FanDuel. -7.5, 110 either way. Total a little low, but I guess that's with the new quarterback and the fact that Carolina's defense shut down New Orleans, shut down Zach Wilson and the Jets, playing fantastic right now, 43.5. Although it is juice to the over slightly, -115, I'm going to lay the wood with Carolina. They move to 3-0. I think this game goes over, though, on Sunday. I'm going to lean to the over here. Don't love it, but I say it goes over the total.
The Carolina Panthers, you're saying it goes over the total. Okay, yeah. I actually like what they're doing defensively, by the way. Boy, Brian Burns, their defensive end, nasty stuff is what I'm seeing out of him. Nasty stuff is what I'm seeing out of this defense. And then you go offensively, right? It's amazing. Mm-hmm. We got Thursday's game. You've got McCaffrey, who had a whole bunch of cramps during that game, but he's gonna be good to go. And now that he's back in that offense, listen, Matt Rhule last year didn't have very much time with Christian McCaffrey. And now he's back. He's obviously the key cog in that machine. Sam Darnold has, from the preseason to game one to game two, has continually taken a step forward. And I don't know if there's going to be more hype around this team than after they demolished the Texans on national television. So if you think that there's a little bit of buzz around this team now, just wait till this victory coming up on Thursday night, because they are going bananas. Big fan of what's going on there. I think Sam Darnold has turned in two performances, and it'll probably be a third, of what we expected out of him when he was drafted by the Jets. Defensively, massive step forward talent-wise. Right. Yeah, you were on the Panthers over early in the season. I think that the question is, does Sam Darnold continue to progress? I think the answer is yes. He has some of the best weapons in the National Football League. I think that this is a wonderful opportunity for the Panthers to make a statement on national TV by playing, you know, a team that probably belongs in the XFL.
Yeah, well, I agree with that. Now, one prop that I do like right from the get-go, McCaffrey, 86.5. I know it seems a little bit high, but you got to figure they're going to pound the rock. 114 either way, under or over. I like that. I know he's gonna catch the ball out of the backfield, but I expect that offensive line to wear down Houston now. They got worn down a little bit by a very physical offensive line in Cleveland. I see the same type of recipe. Hunt, Chubb had productive days. I think McCaffrey could break out with a 100-yard performance in this matchup.
He leads the NFL in yards per scrimmage at 324. So if you wanted to go to all-purpose yards, I think that's fine. The one bet that I made already, and I'm 2 for 2 so far on it, over receiving yards. They have just – Darnold just peppers – this dude at this point. And we look back at it, 65 yards last week off 5 catches. He's just so explosive. 9 catches for 89. He's at 45.5. You might as well do it now, because that line gets bet up to 50. I think at least 50. Get in on McCaffrey receiving yards. The only way he doesn't get that is with cramps. Last week he missed a chunk of time and still had 5 for 65. If you love the rushing prop, just go all purpose or hit both bets. I love him in this passing game.
Well, I have a better number than you, and that's what I wanted to ask. I'm going off FanDuel. They have 44.5. Are you taking yours off DraftKings?
I don't even remember where I hit it. I'll hit 44.5 if I need to, cash out. That's even better.
FanDuel has 44.5, so check it out. Shop around. Depending upon the state, depending upon where you're at, you know, certain players have higher odds and higher productions, depending upon, obviously, it is a publicly bet team, too, so keep an eye out.
You know what? I gave you the wrong number. You're right. It was 44.5. I thought I got it at 45.5. So 44.5 receiving yards for McCaffrey. I have already placed that bet.
Okay, good. I think right now, and when the only receiving prop that they have for Houston is Cooks. And obviously he's been the go-to of Tyrod Taylor up until this point. You know, you look at DJ Moore, to give you an idea about Cooks, 70.5, DJ Moore, 67.5, Robbie Anderson, 44.5. We've seen Houston now go through two overs, right? Over against Jacksonville, over against Cleveland. That would be the MO, but with the rookie quarterback, maybe the quarterback to wide receiver relationship isn't there outside of Cooks, so maybe there is some inconsistency. Do we feel confident about outside the receivers, Ingram? Can he get to over 37.5 in the run game? Because you got to think, with a rookie quarterback making his first career start, maybe they pound the rock with Ingram and work off a play action a little bit more.
How? How are they going to have time to run the ball?
I know. The offensive line is atrocious. I know they're terrible. But still, you would have to think that maybe early on that's what they look to do to get Mills into a rhythm.
Yeah, I think so. I think that they're going to try and get Mills into a rhythm. But like I said, I like this pass rush for Carolina. It's the NFL. Kooky things have happened. Short week. McCaffrey with the cramps. I just don't see how the Texans keep this close. And I told you I teased it down to 1.5. Right. Is 8 points tough to cover in the NFL? It's a lot.
It is. It is. Look at week one with
San Francisco
and Detroit, right? That 8.5 point number, that hook killed a ton of bettors that had San Francisco, right? You have that huge lead, and here comes Jared Goff. I will say on the flip side, you don't have the veteran. You have a rookie, so if they do build that lead, odds are that Davis Mills isn't going to lead the comeback. So I think you're good with that one. I guess if we're looking at the first two games on the board, right? Carolina at 7.5, and now this next game that we're going to touch on, which is Arizona at 7.5, that's the more fishier one to me. Because Carolina's been dominant. And I know they played a very close game against Minnesota, but Kyler Murray, I mean, he's been stepping up. 400 passing yards last week. He's throwing to every playmaker on that team, right? Hopkins, Rondale Moore with a 77-yard reception last week. Now they go on the road to hot, humid Jacksonville. That Urban Meyer, and I'll say it now, I was on his train. He stinks right now. After 2 weeks, he's got 1 foot out the door. I think this team is not even focused. 13 points last week. One came on a kickoff return. But 7.5 minus 102 for the Cardinals. If you want to take a shot on Jacksonville, minus 120 on FanDuel. Shouldn't that line be more like 9, 10? I mean, I don't know. I know it's
I think it will
game,
be. I think it will so? Be. As the week goes on, yeah, you'll get more public bettors that start looking at this. And everybody knows the Jaguars are horrible, and everybody has seen the highlights of Kyler Murray. I don't know if it was you. I think it was Gabe over the weekend I was talking to. He is a Maserati. Kyler Murray's a Maserati. When he is finely tuned, when he's 100%, maybe even 90%, he's the MVP. I think he is legitimately unstoppable. The only guy that can stop Kyler Murray is himself. We saw last year he got hurt about halfway into the season, lower body injury, upper body injury. He became a pedestrian quarterback. The Arizona Cardinals completely tanked. Right now, Mr. Maserati, 100%. Just came out of a tune-up. That is why I think the Cardinals can just cover this number straight up. We're looking at a potential blowout here. But again, another game you could tease down if you want to. You telling me the Cardinals aren't going to win by a field goal? Like, if the Jaguars upset the Cardinals this week, that will be the biggest upset of the NFL season. Anybody the Jaguars beat this year, with the exception of if they can get back at the Texans, would be the biggest upset of the season.
I agree. I agree with that. If they upset Arizona in this ball game, that would be, after 3 weeks, huge, yeah. Huge upset. The way Kyler Murray's playing, he's playing like an MVP candidate. You know, we talk about Russell Wilson, rightfully so, but after 2 weeks, Kyler has shown he is living up to the hype, right? And you put those playmakers around him. I mean, they have Kirk, Rondale Moore, A.J. Green. You talk about Hopkins, Chase Edmonds out of the backfield. And then his ability to break contain at any given moment, tuck it and run, just like Lamar Jackson. A different type of runner, though, I will say. Lamar's more of a north and south guy. Kyler does create a little bit more in terms of the passing game to buy himself time to locate his receivers. I think that's the difference between Kyler and Lamar. Lamar just tucks it, runs, gets between point A and point B in 2 seconds. Kyler will sit. He'll wait till those receivers get open a little bit more. He's a more patient runner. And then if it's not there, then he tucks it and runs.
Yeah, to me, he is the quintessential, prototypical quarterback in the NFL. I think he's better than Lamar Jackson. He's more accurate than Lamar Jackson. The cannons, the same. As far as the rushing ability, I probably give a slight edge to Lamar. But Kyler's rushing ability is amazing, too. And the thing I love about both these guys, they avoid hard contact. It's something that RG3 never learned how to do. Michael Vick had problems with it. Mariota had problems with it. If you're going to run that much, don't let guys get clean hits on you. And that's what Kyler Murray does. Don't get clean hits on him.
We'll come back. We'll also talk about the player props for Arizona and Jacksonville, and then look at Indianapolis, Tennessee.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Listening to Pro Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and Holden Kushner.
Continuing the conversation, NFL Week 3 breakdowns, talked about Arizona and Jacksonville. The Thursday night game is Carolina and Houston. That's why the player props are up. No player props on Arizona, Jacksonville. We'll talk about them throughout the week as they start throwing them up on DraftKings and FanDuel, respectively. But we'll turn our attention to Tennessee and Indianapolis. So you heard about Carson Wentz, double ankle sprain. He's not technically ruled out yet for Sunday's game, but we talked about it in the break, Holden. 50% Carson Wentz or Jacob Eason. Pick your poison in terms of that assessment for Frank Reich. Tennessee, what a victory, right? Trailing 24-9 on the road in Seattle. They found a way, tie that ball game up in the fourth quarter. Derrick Henry, over 150 rushing yards, three touchdowns. The defense stepped up. Dominant second half adjustments and performance against Russell Wilson. We know that they typically struggle, Tennessee, right, against Indianapolis. They had this game last Thursday, last year on a Thursday night, lost, right, in dominating fashion. Colts won that ball game, and the over came in. 5.5? Isn't that a little light to either have Wentz, who's banged up, or Jacob Eason laying only 5.5, minus 105, at home on FanDuel?
Well, this is interesting, because I really do applaud the Colts for the way they defend, they played defense against the Rams. That was spectacular. They were swarming. They confused Stafford a few times. They hit him a few times. So ultimately, if the Colts are going to win this game, it's going to be because of their defense just shutting things down on the other side of the ball. It was very, very promising that Tennessee kind of realized that Tannehill needs to run play action a little bit more. They did that a little bit more. They're not near where they needed to be, obviously, with Arthur Smith moving on. And Arthur Smith, hey, dude, you got one of the best young tight ends of the game. Learn how to use Kyle Pitts for a whole game. But back to this one, right?
Don't even start. Arthur Smith's schemes were supposed to revolutionize the NFL. Remember?
Disaster.
They put up a lot. They put up over 20 points.
I don't care.
25. Come on, it was 28-25 in the third quarter. You had a shot with that.
Yeah, and they decided not to use their number one, their top five pick for most of that game. Anyways, here's what's coming into this game. Two things. First of all, 50% Carson Wentz, 100% Jacob Eason. I think they're screwed at the quarterback position. You're either going to have a mobile Carson Wentz, which is something that I don't want, or you're going to have a kid that came in and threw a pick right away. That's the first thing. Second of all, how are they going to stop Derrick Henry, who went for 103 against them last year on just 19 carries, and then went for 178 and three touchdowns on the next one? That's the game right there. So there's two stories to this game. How much pressure does the Tennessee defense put on Carson Wentz or Eason to force them into mistakes? And I think there will be mistakes made there. And on the other side, how do you stop Derrick Henry? Wow. First half of the season usually does not perform. He is going to steamroll this team. So you and I are on different sides of this game. Plus, the Colts are just, they're swapping out offensive tackles. I mean, you've got Eric Fisher, but he's coming off the Achilles injury. They're moving things around on their offensive line. I'm not with you on this one, buddy.
No,
I think it's going to be a long day for the Colts.
I just said okay. It's fishy. But I will say this. If Wentz starts, I'm all in on the Titans. If it's Eason, I'm going to roll the dice because I do feel his arm strength gives the Colts a legitimate shot to win this game and moving forward. I think he is a better quarterback overall and has better upside. I'll say it here. You could disagree. Listeners could disagree. I really don't care. I think Jacob Eason could be a good quarterback in the NFL if you give him some time. There's going to be growing pains. I think if I'm the Colts, no matter who starts, you need Jonathan Taylor in the running game. You need to rely on the physicality of the offensive line to shorten this game and look to ground out a victory over Tennessee. I mean, there's just no two ways about it. At the end of the day, they did not utilize Jonathan Taylor. What do you have, 13 carries, 51 yards in that loss to LA?
The whole running game. Yeah, and Hines didn't get work. Taylor...
But why? But why? They had the lead 21-17 in the third quarter. Stafford comes right back down. He goes up 24-21. You're in a one-score game. There's no cause of concern or reason to panic. You could have relied on the offensive line in that ball game.
Yeah. I think the offensive line is making a lot of switches right now. I would have liked to see them run, but when they did, it wasn't really that efficient. So I'm not going to go as far as you are on that point.
I think I'll say this. This total, I think, is a dead under in this matchup. Because I think the only way Indianapolis can win is if they run the game. You said run the football. You said that they're going to utilize Derrick Henry. There's time of possession. As long as they can contain him, don't give up chunk plays. I know that's easier said than done, but you got to feel that Indianapolis is going to stack the box, take away Henry, and then force Tannehill to beat him over the top. Can he do it is the main question. Now, A.J. Brown didn't have an elite performance on the road. He actually tweeted out that a family member reached out to him after the game and said he couldn't even catch COVID if he wanted to. That's how bad he was on Sunday. check his timeline. He did say that. He said, I had a family member come out. I had a family member tell me that I couldn't catch COVID if I wanted. That's how bad I played today. I said, all right.
Yeah. Wow.
Hey, at least he's honest.
I love this under. Remember last week, looked at the Raiders Steelers under.
It was
48.
Wasn't it the same number? Yep.
I think I got 48 on this one. Are you going to hit this, or did you already hit it?
It's juiced. I haven't hit it yet because I want to see who's going to start this game. You know, when do you think they make that assessment? They're going to hold this out until Friday, or do they give us a determination by Wednesday about who's starting? You know, as this game progresses, I'm hoping. Hoping that they tell us midweek, but we'll see. I think definitely, I'm telling you this right now, I am playing a Jonathan Taylor over prop. I was on his over prop last week. It didn't hit. I think definitely they need him in this offense either way, with either quarterback.
So you think, well, let's just talk through this then. How many points are the Colts getting with Wentz, and how many points are the Colts getting with Eason? Because if Eason's in there, he's still not ready. He's still not ready. I'm telling you right now. I know maybe long term he has a future. He came in, he threw the pick. I do not see this guy having success against the Titans. So they're going to have to run the football a ton. If the Titans get 20 points in this game, I think that would be probably a nice little number.
I
should say the Colts, if the Colts get 20 points. The Titans, on the other hand, that's the team you got to worry about.
Yeah, 28. I think it's the top end for the Titans. So if that happens, right, if you're taking the Colts in this ballgame, 23, it's 28-23, that's five. That's an over. I don't think they get up there. I think top end for the Tennessee is 24. That's right.
The Colts?
I think 24-17 in that area. I would lean Titans if Wentz
Colts
starts.
Put up 16 against the Seahawks at home with Wentz. They put up 24 last week against the Rams. And now you're going to go on the road for the first time this season, potentially with a quarterback making his first start in the NFL. No thanks. Mm-mm. No thanks. And then you got to look at the side on this. You got to look at the side. Minus 5.5.
I told you, if Wentz starts, I'm taking Tennessee. If Eason starts, I like the kid. I'm taking the 5.5. It all depends on that.
Okay.
I am not a buyer of Carson Wentz in any capacity. Never liked him in Philadelphia. I don't like him now. He was anointed the king before he even won a playoff game. I mean, the fans in Philly made it sound like they had the second coming of Joe Montana when they drafted him out of North Dakota State. They really did. I mean, in the South Jersey, oh, Carson Wentz, Big Red. It was come on. It was amazing how he got, like, you know, he was the best thing since sliced bread coming out of an FCS school. And he did play well in the early part of his career, but he slowly regressed. And I just don't see him as a leader of an offense anymore. So that's we'll talk about this game tomorrow. Maybe there'll be more updated odds and player props on there. How about Baltimore? Baltimore 7.5 against Detroit. -110 either way. You're coming off that dominant performance against Kansas City. Lamar Jackson left, Lamar Jackson right. Pounding the rock. He's doing it through the air with Mark Andrews, Marquise Brown. I mean, you're telling me they can't cover. I like Baltimore to abuse Detroit in this matchup. I don't care if it's on the road in the dome.
Only concern here is that game against Kansas City. You want to talk about emotional win. Like, that was the Super Bowl of the regular season for Lamar Jackson. He'd never beaten the Chiefs. Harbaugh struggling against the Chiefs. So they're coming off a game against the Chiefs, and now you're facing one of the worst teams in the world. This, to me, is an in-game opportunity. I would like to gauge how the Ravens do in the first half. Do they come out strong or they come out flat? They come out strong, I'll probably have to pass on the game. But if they come out flat, then just like this week, I think a second half turnaround would probably come and the Lions would get blown out. So I'm targeting this game live. I put an L next to it. I should probably put more than an L. How about an IVE next to that? Because if we put an L next to it, I already lost. All right, live betting opportunity, Lisey.
All right, well, I like the under more in this game than, you know, because here's the thing. You have Detroit, they put up 17 points against Green Bay. You have Baltimore that put up 36. The way that defense played in the second half against Patrick Mahomes, they're going to be playing with confidence. Who scares you on Detroit outside of, we just talked about it, Hockenson, Cephas? They're going to stretch that defense over the top? No way. No way. They're not going to do it. How is Detroit going to score on Baltimore's defense in this ballgame? That's the main question. I don't see it happening in any capacity. So to that, I lean to the under, and that's why I like Baltimore to cover this high number of 7.5, even though they're on the road.
Yeah, I have a hard time thinking that they won't, but ultimately I want to see how they come out, whether it's flat or not. Now, they've got an extra day of prep as opposed to the Lions, so maybe that kind of balances things out. But more injury news for the Ravens, man. Cornerback Chris Westry, here's another one. He's probably going to be out, so... Whew, it's gonna be rough. There's no Marcus Peters. Westry is probably going to miss this game. We're looking at a possible Buster Screen addition. The injuries are mounting up for the Ravens, but yes, the Lions are hot garbage.
How about the Sunday 1 o'clock game in Buffalo? 8.5 over Washington. -115 for the Bills, coming off a dominant performance over the Miami Dolphins. Washington, we know what they did against Daniel Jones and the New York Giants on Thursday night. 46.5 is the total, -110 either way. Buffalo at home, -115. You got the kid that's taking over for Fitz.
Heinicke.
Yeah, the kid.
I like him.
I like him too, but can he keep it within that number on the road is the big question.
Right before I came on, I was reading a great story on the struggles of Josh Allen. Right now, the ball in the air, not nearly as accurate in 10 to 25 yards, air yard passes. He needs to pick that up, Lisey. He needs to become more accurate like he was last year.
We'll talk about it next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Pro Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and Holden Kushner.
Wrapping up today's show, we left off with the big game in Buffalo. 8.5-point favorites over the Washington football team and Taylor Heinicke. Can the kid keep it within the number on Sunday afternoon? Holden's going to give us a great stat on Josh Allen and the inefficiency of the passing game right now.
Yeah, so his yards per attempt last on these throws to the outside, right? He averaged 11.5 yards per attempt on intermediate throws alone. Forget about the outside, just intermediate throws. So we're talking 10 to 25 yards. This year, it's in half, 5.8. 11.5 to 5.8. So first of all, he's not throwing as deep. Second of all, the accuracy, way, way down from where it was last year. Intermediate to the right, deep to the left, excellent. Green. This year, the only green he has is throwing right down the hash marks to the right or right in between the hash marks. Everywhere else, it's been bad. It's been inaccurate. And I go back to what we talked about Tannehill. They ran less play action for the first game. They weren't running play action in the second game. All of a sudden, run play action, big ball to Emmanuel Sanders. So this comes back to another scheme thing. Get Josh Allen out in space. Let him make some throws on the run. He's sitting in the pocket. He's off to a slow start. It's inefficient. So get him out. Go back and do what he did well last year. Can we say that this week he's going to blow up, though? No. Is it an overrated Washington defense? Maybe. Maybe they're not a top five. I still think they're a top 10 defense in this league. So to me, it's a stay away spot right now. This is an ugly game to me, Lisi.
Yeah, the only question I have, and you know I love Heinicke, is the fact that the kid on the road with that defense, mm-hmm. a disciplined defense in Buffalo, they're going to force him to read coverage. Does the kid push too much? Reminds me of a little bit of a young Brett Favre, right? That Riverboat gambler. I would lean early on to Buffalo. So we'll talk about this game and all the others for Holden Kushner and our great producer, Andrew Torres. I'm Joe Lisi. Have a great day, everyone. We'll see you tomorrow.